This program is a proud member of Univaz. Unified, unique voices. Learn more at univazpods.net.
Hello, my name's Patrick, and I'm a Scream Queen. I'm a Scream Queen, and so are you! Screamers, and welcome to another episode of Scream Queens, the podcast where horror gets gay. Tonight, it's episode 209, and we are taking a trip to Corn Country. Yes, because we're going to that wonderful world of the made-for-TV movies of the 1970s, and we are going to discover the dark secret of Harvest Home. And joining me for this episode are returning guests, author Stephen Morris, and host of the Smellcast, Mr. Toppy Smelly. Alright, now before we go any further, I have to tell you that right now, I'm sick as a dog. I've had a head cold that's laid me up for 3 days now. Okay, so actually sitting down to do this is painful. And I just want to curl up and go back to bed. But I have to apologize. The recording of this interview is all kinds of bonkers. There were technical problems. I was high on Vicodin because my back got thrown out again. I lose a guest halfway through because of technical problems. And it's just kind of all over the place. And also, trying to put it together now, I realize it's too long for one episode. So I'm going to be breaking The Dark Secret of Harvest Home up into two parts. So this first half is going to go up until, you're going to cover the first part of the show, the first hour and a half of the movie, which they aired on the first night, and the second half will be the second night. See, nice and easy. And it also goes up until the point where technical problems just screwed everything up, and it might end abruptly, but just know that everything's cool, okay? And it's more important that I get something out to you then it be, you know, technically perfect. Am I right? Of course I'm right. I am going to get everything set in motion here, and then I'm going to curl up a little ball and go back to bed. But in the interim, please enjoy part one of The Dark Secret of Harvest Home.
There are some people you learn to leave be, Nick Constantine.
Like what?
What? No man knows? No. Woman tells?
Betty Davis stars as the widow.
Make me the con!
Who was she? An earth mother, healing, and wise? Was she a devil who directed ritual murder?
He's come to see. Let him see.
Why did she choose Nick and Beth to take the house?
House ain't meant for profit. It's meant for wealth and a baby.
This is where my baby is going to be born.
Hey, listen to me.
It won't be born. It can't be. I am sterile.
You'll bear a child in the spring, Beth. It is prophesied.
Could the widow give life as well as take it?
The widow saved Kate's life today.
Whoa, whoa!
What did she say?
A ghost. A ghost that was dead and now's come alive. Is it really a ghost?
A revenue man disappeared in a lonesome. Looking for that still. Supposed to be his ghost that haunts the woods.
You're a fool, Nick! Do you want to end up like me?
Were there forbidden rituals of death at Harvest Home? Judge for yourself. Now.
So joining me on this very special Thanksgiving episode are two fabulous, fabulous guests. Both unique. I got nothing. Both unique and I was going to make it sound like the Capulets and the Romulans. But Romulans? That's not right.
Ha! It could be.
Hi, everybody. I'm on Vicodin because I hurt my back.
He's on Vicodin, folks, and he's not kidding.
And the dark secret of Harvest Home is that Patrick has a pill problem.
Woo.
I'm Patrick. I took the yellow pills. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the TV movie from 1979 called The Dark Secret of Harvest Home. And that was a listener request. Actually, a lot of you were requesting this one for a very long time, so shut the fuck up. We're finally doing it. Yay.
Yeah.
And joining me on this very special Thanksgiving episode and this joyous celebration are two, I really could not pick two better guys to do this together. My goodness, I'm thrilled to have them here. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, may I introduce to you Mr. Stephen Morris and Toppy Smelly.
Hello.
How do, Patrick?
Oh, I do fine at the moment. I don't feel nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Typical.
Well,
it just like at happy hour.
Well, it also just kind of ties in with like the first, because this movie is a miniseries. This is in two very long parts. The first half is all their very New York 70s problem, and I kind of feel like the mom in this, you know, going to my psychiatrist and taking lots of pills to deal with my problems all the time.
Complaining about the patriarchy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes.
Very New York.
Okay. So, as much as I'm complaining about the movie, which I'm really not.
I am.
Okay. You're not going to sell books this way, Stephen. I was excited to see it because this was the one made-for-TV movie from the 70s that I was forbidden to watch.
Why?
I was all ready. I had the popcorn popped. I was sitting on the couch, and my mother came in and said, "You need to go to bed right now."
What? Crowhaven Farm is much more racy.
Well, apparently, I guess the church or the school sent a note home saying that this is one you don't want the innocent children to watch because it's all about fucking.
Because they all saw Crowhaven Farm 2 years before and came in the next day crazy.
Oh, well, that was fine. That was just one little girl who wanted to have sex with her adopted father. One little girl. That's all it was.
Eish.
Well, you know, these people didn't have cable TV. They had to do something to pass the time. Okay, so before we go any further, let me do a more proper introduction to the guests. Both of these guys have been on the show before, and I'm thrilled to have them back. So I'm going to start with the guy who's going to be bringing his professional expertise to this one, because this is a movie that is right up his alley, because he is, of course, an expert on not only wickedness, but wickedness in women.
Oh.
And that would be author Stephen Marth. Sitting right
now.
Wow.
And he's got nothing to say.
I'm waiting to hear what you're gonna I kind of
limp wristed the ball to you. So just
yes, I run conferences on evil and human wickedness and the supernatural, and I write supernatural thrillers, and all the fantastic elements in the books are based on authentic occult beliefs and practices, so they're the real deal. You can use them as recipe books if you want.
Yeah, so don't fuck with him, Toppy. He knows shit.
That's I guess so.
Stephen going to get you.
I got all my candles and chicken blood right here.
Exactly. He will light a candle and one of your footprints in the dirt, and you're fucked.
Doomed.
So I figured this movie would give him a lot to talk about, but apparently not.
I can tell you how it put me to sleep.
Oh my God. Stephen, don't say that.
Somebody's got to be the devil's advocate.
We gather together to ask the Lord's blessing. on this joyous holiday. Someone's got to be the cranky old uncle at the table, right. I suppose. Okay, so that's fine. Yes, and so Stephen, what are you working on now? I know you're working on one of your religious books, because that's your expertise.
Yes, I'm doing a nonfiction project, but I'm also working on a supernatural thriller set in contemporary Ireland that involves vampires and ghosts.
Oh, hey, is that building on that vampire character that you had in?
Come Hell or High Water, there's an Irish vampire woman in Come Hell or High Water.
She was badass.
And she reappears with some other vampires and ghosts in this new one I'm working on, Earth to Earth, Ashes to Ashes.
And really, I think the idea of an Irish vampire is just ridiculous because you'd never find them. We're all so pale anyway.
It's redundant.
Now.
Okay. And of course, Toppy Smelly, the host of the world famous Smellcast. How are things in Pickle Hollow, Toppy?
Well, Pickle Hollow, you know, it's harvest time.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I was watching this movie. I said, if this happened at Pickle Hollow, this would be a very different movie.
No, well, it would.
Shucking the pickles.
Yeah, we shuck the pickles. Our community here, very much like the dark home of Harvest, we're very similar. We just do pickles instead of the corn.
And somehow that's more obscene, and I don't know why.
I don't either.
Do you have giant skulls sitting around the pickle fields?
Actually, yes. But this whole central New York is corn country, folks. Corn country.
Really? I wasn't sure if there was really corn in Connecticut in the places that they were.
Well, not like we were in Connecticut or anything.
Well, no, with those accents. Or Maine.
No, well, actually, it was Maine. Shot in Ohio. They didn't shoot it in, you know, Petaluma this time. Oh,
God damn it. It was a fucking Ohio.
But you actually have cornfields by you, Mr. Snowy? Oh,
my God. They're all over the place.
Really? Mm-hmm. Huh.
This story could have happened right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's why I always say, you got to keep away from them niblets, Toppy. Mm-hmm. They will get you. They'll get you every time.
Well.
Yeah, so this movie is based on a book by Tom, I believe it's Tom Tryon, is how you pronounce it? I'm not sure.
I think so.
Yeah, and he only wrote two books. Both of which were made into movies. No, and the other one was The Other, which is amazing.
Oh my God, that movie's amazing. I love that movie.
Yes, and also Creepy Farm Tale.
Fucking hard movie to find and see.
It is. It is. That's because Uta Hagen doesn't want it to be seen.
Oh, fucking Uden.
She's like, I am a stage actress. I do not do movies.
Except that one.
Yeah, she did that one. No, I'm just, no, it's not true at all. It's not true at all. I'm just saying, she was a difficult lady. But when you only do a handful of movies, never mind. Are we talking about The Other? No, we're not. But it's a fantastic movie, and this one is kind of similar in tone. And apparently, Betty Davis, when she read the book, of Harvest Home.
Yes.
Said, when they make this into a movie, I demand that I play the widow.
No the widow. Kidding.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Really?
Huh. Uh-huh. And this is
too bad she didn't get more scenes.
Well.
She may have thought that this was going to be a theatrical production.
No.
That's probably what she thought.
She knew what it was. But no, this is the thing. I was watching this movie and go, this is why Betty Davis had a career after Baby Jane and Joan Crawford didn't.
That's right.
Because Betty Davis is not afraid.
Good for her.
To play her age.
She was not afraid.
Because Joan Crawford in her later movies, man, you're just like, oh, honey, no. Straightjacket, no.
and
you cannot
folks,
come on to the 20-year-old boys anymore. It's not cute anymore. No.
And folks, I want you to know this is Betty Davis pre-stroke. She was really still quite vital.
Uh-huh.
And she talked all of her lines just as if all of the drag queens that you've heard, she sounded just like them. And I don't know if her dialogue was, but anyway, she sounded just like all of her imitators. But they
she knew who her
learned.
Audience was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But this was
and that's a shame
vital.
Because, yeah. What was the name of the town, by the way? It's something Coombe.
Cornwall.
Yeah, of course it's Cornwall. Duh. Of Cornwall, Coombe.
Cornhole.
It turns out that all the men there, the boys were growing up to be gay anyway because of her.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's why it turned out. Things turned out the way it did. That's why it was such a matriarchal society.
Yes, that's why they had to be blinded, so they'd leave each other alone.
Yes, but Betty Davis is at the height of her elderly powers before stroke.
And she, and again, big movie star doing TV, which was unheard of in the day.
Oh, this must have made, I swear to God, there must have been a TV Guide cover. Must have been.
Well, there must have been a big audience turnout, too, because of that.
I would think so. This would have been big shit.
Well, this is a big deal, especially if the Catholic Church got mouthy about it. Then you know people are going to watch it.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, did Didn't we say that? Did we say that in the
Yeah. If it was banned in Boston, then yeah, that would definitely
be. Yeah, because I mean, every now and then, my school and the church that ran the school would send notes home about the things you weren't supposed to watch. And oddly enough, normally it was Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Welcome Back, Cotter, and Soap.
Ow.
I don't think they were comfortable with that sit on it business in Happy Days.
Right, all that implicit teenage sexuality.
Yeah, but particularly that sit on it business. And clearly Laverne and Shirley were lesbians. So, yeah.
Now you tell me.
Spoiler. It's all there in the subtext. But yeah, well, so when the thing is, my parents did not listen to the notes about the TV shows.
Good for them.
That's why I was shocked that I was forbidden to watch this one.
Oh.
It is odd that they would pay attention to that one and not the others.
I think my mother might have read the book.
Mm.
They had other reasons to
and it might have been, having a little moist moment on the chaise lounge by the pool.
Yeah. I gathered the book probably had more sexuality.
Yeah.
Whereas the TV movie implied it. I bet the book more than implied it.
Uh-huh. I bet it did. What was I going to say? I don't remember. It was something about the church. And oh, well. Never mind. Doesn't matter. So,
okay. Patrick, I want to know, did you see it back in the day when it came?
No, this is the first time I saw it. Because
so when did you first see it?
Last week. Because when it was released on VHS, it was released in a heavily edited version.
Oh,
right.
That was maybe an hour and 45 minutes or something like that. And everybody complained, blah, 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 blah. And it was never, ever put on DVD. And a full version has never been released. And it wasn't until TNT aired it a couple of years ago that it was able to now wind up on YouTube.
So was this an ABC movie of the week?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what network aired it.
I don't know. I would have known if I would have been allowed to watch it.
Yeah.
Heck, because wasn't a movie of the week. It was a miniseries. It was a two-night event.
And Patrick, I'm trying to think all the way through I watched this movie, I tried to think, have I seen this? Is anything ringing a bell? And nothing strongly rung a bell. But this is the kind of TV movie that I would have killed to have seen.
Oh, yeah.
When it originally ran.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I'm sure, I bet you anything it made TV Guide cover.
Oh, yeah. The TV Guide cover, I did see when I was looking for images for the blog.
Well, there you go. I know I would have known about this movie. And this is the kind of movie that I would have seen. But if I did see it, I did not retain much memory.
Mm-hmm. I never saw it before, but what struck me was it's so similar in many ways to Crowhaven Farm. It felt like I was watching something I'd seen before.
Yeah, except no witches.
Well,
yeah, well, the widow is definitely...
Are they?
Got a foot in that.
Are they just in touch with the earth, Stephen?
Well,
six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Let's talk about this theme that, of course, we're going to get into, but this theme of Puritan cultures originating in the U.S. and toiling the land, growing corn. And there's been several movies and probably many books that have this theme of something.
Oh, God. No. Okay. Never mind. It looked like the thing was not recording, but it is. We're good.
Oh, okay.
We're good. Panic. Motherfucker, I would have killed everybody.
We would have killed you.
So that was the Dark City to Harvest Home, everybody. Bye.
But I know this theme of strange ancient history into the growing of the corn and spooging on the ground with your sperm, and it's all very and. I can think of Children of the Corn from Stephen King, mm-hmm. and I can think of several other. And Patrick, did you have a word for this subgenre of horror?
Yes. Corn porn.
Yeah. Corn porn.
Yeah, I didn't really think of that towards the end we're jumping way ahead, but when the kids come out to do their corn play, they're like, it's the corn play. I'm like, oh God, is that like puppy play? What's happening? What's going on?
Yeah, it's a particular sub fetish.
And then I'm going, well, it is really kind of corn porn. It's all about seeing the corn.
I would really love to know the origins of, you know, who started. You know, who told the story first? Because it's all derivative. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it started. Maybe it started with Ichabod's fucking Sleepy Hollow story. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, I mean, as I mentioned before we started recording, I know all about the Amish, having done a musical about them while living for a summer in Amish country.
Do tell.
Yes. How do you know all about the Amish, Patrick?
I lived among them, I walked among them, and I bought their apple butter.
Oh, my.
And I marveled how they were able to keep their pants up without snaps, buttons, or zippers.
Did you have any of their corn?
No.
He had the apple butter.
I had the apple butter.
As a lube.
The apple butter on the corn.
You know what? You know what? They're great cooks, but they cannot bake for shit.
Really?
No. Not in my little community of Burden Hand. No, sir.
I would have thought they'd be good at pastry and bread.
Nope. Not these folk, anyway. But the thing is, with the Amish, every community of them is completely different than every other community.
Right.
Different laws, different rules, different beliefs. And then you throw in the, who are the other ones? The Amish light.
Pennsylvania Dutch?
There's another.
Oh my God, my nephew married one.
They're more involved with the technology
Mennonites.
Than the Amish. Mennonites.
So.
Oh, them.
So there is a there. So if you were a person of Amish descent traveling to another Amish community, you may not know what the rules are.
Right.
So there is an element of secrecy and mystery to all these communities. You know, they want the outsiders out and the insiders in, and they have their ways, and that's the way it is.
Yes.
And it's because it's the way it's always been done.
Right. And it's not that easy to get between them on horseback.
Well, it's not like these folks were in Cornwall Cold Cove were Amish. They had their own thing going on.
Right. They used cars.
Yeah, they used cars. She was very happy to get that electric sewing machine.
Yes, she was.
Can't use a tractor, but an electric sewing machine, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, Betty Davis got an electric sewing machine. She was happy.
Uh-huh. So she can make a scarecrow. That's my other line of work.
I could make the scarecrow.
I called this one Joan.
Now, this movie did not really identify this community as Amish or Mennonite or anything.
The Mennonites watch TV. They're very loosey-goosey, but you know, the Amish wouldn't have known any better. They're not going to watch it on TV and find out about it. But I mean, I can see why. I mean, you don't want to cause a panic, and the religion was completely different.
Yes,
it was a weird mix of Christianity and super duper pagan rites.
Yes,
right, and the pastor was clearly subordinate to the widow.
I love that. I love that. It looks like he's in charge, but he's not.
No, he is very secondary.
Yes. Okay, so since I know it's like a 7-hour event, but could one of you give me a nice tight 30-second elevator speech plot summary of the setup to the Dark
Secret?
I'll
leave that to you, Mr. Toppy.
All right, I am prepared. I am ready.
30 seconds, Toppy.
Here we go. A New York City couple who have a daughter that is not of great health and who has expressed to her parents that she's afraid to go to school because walking the streets of New York is dangerous, mm-hmm. and she's asthmatic,
And this New York City couple, well, the wife, I don't think she does too much, but she does visit her psychiatrist a lot.
Yes, she does.
The husband
She rages in that wonderful 70s-esque kind of way. Please continue.
Yes, indeed. The husband is a hard-working. He's in advertising. He's in illustration. He has a high-pressure job. And they are clearly not getting along. In fact, they haven't had sex in ages.
Mm-hmm. Right. She wants to submit, she says, and he won't let her.
Well, she has problems.
Well, and he stepped out on her. So.
Yeah, he stepped out. Anyways, suddenly the wife inherits some kind of property. Somebody died in her family. They go to investigate it. It's Maine, I think.
In Connecticut.
It's like a Connecticut.
The accents are Maine, so you're not wrong.
The accents are definitely Maine.
And they go there and they decide, amazingly enough, to live in this rural corn cob country.
Uh-huh.
And they become embroiled and invested in this community's heritage, which goes 300 years back. And as this family goes through this, they change dramatically. The daughter is saved from her asthma. The wife and the man, they're no longer apart. They start having lots of sex. And eventually,
yes,
we discover the dark secret of Harvest Home.
Mm-hmm. Which we've already kind of spoiled, but that's totally fine. Well done, Toppy.
Yeah.
You ran a little over, but I was just so taken by your smooth baritone voice that I just couldn't interrupt.
Beautifully, beautifully done.
Yes. Yes, and let's just talk about the cast for a second here, besides Betty Davis. We've got the guy who plays the husband, David Aykroyd. No relation to Dan Aykroyd.
But he looked vaguely familiar.
Well, he was in everything. He was 70s TV guest star staple.
Absolutely.
And I just covered him, and he was in a movie that I did over the summer, one of the made-for-TV movies. This movie called Deadly Lessons, where he was sleeping with Donna Reed and all the female students at his exclusive girl's school, and everybody knew and everyone was Donna Reed was the headmistress, yeah.
But she's so pure and sweet. How could she be fooling around with him?
I don't know how he could have fooled around with her because she had so much Aquanet in her hair that it was a lethal weapon. But that's not the point right now. Yeah. So he. This is what he seems to do. He plays mildly sleazy folk.
He could run for president.
Mildly sleazy.
Well.
Yeah, that horse has left the barn, unfortunately. yeah, so we got him, and the wife is played by Joanna Miles, who I remember from Dallas. She was on for a season or two, and she used to be on Chicago. The daughter is Rosanna Arquette.
Rosanna Arquette.
Yeah, way before she got all desperately seeking Susan.
Yes.
And it took me a while to recognize her. And once I did, it was so – because I'd forgotten about her. Because there's so many Arquettes, it's hard to keep track of them all.
So was she Cliff's daughter?
Yes.
Yeah, Nick.
I have no idea what the father is. I know that I think of it. But she's David's sister and Patricia's sister and the other one who died, Alexis. Yeah, they're all siblings.
I just remember Cliff from Hollywood Squares.
I'm sorry, there's only one person I remember from Hollywood Squares, and it's not
Well, there's Paul Lynde, Cliff Arquette, and Vincent Price were the three best regulars.
The others were just expendable. You don't need the rest of them. Yeah, it was cool to see her. And the guy, Worthy, who is a young man in the town who becomes very important – very soon, is Miles O'Keefe, who I remember from Caddyshack.
Yeah, he must have shot this movie shortly before Caddyshack.
You're right, because that was 1981.
Yeah.
So he was going and, places.
Yeah, so this was his big break.
Well, actually, he's another one who's he's a child star too. So he worked in TV all the time. And there's a creepy little girl in this, because how could you have a creepy little town without a creepy little girl who doesn't speak?
Yeah, that's this girl was creepy.
That girl is Tracy Gold, who went on to be on Growing Pains for many years with Kirk Cameron.
Ah. Yes,
who abused her so badly that she got a famous eating disorder while she was on the show. Yeah, yeah, it was a whole big thing. She almost died.
She wouldn't eat any corn.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Jesus was telling her that she was too fat to be on the show. That's how Kirk rolls. Yeah, so it's a fun cast. And a lot of the other people, as in all these movies, are like, yeah, I kind of – oh, and of course, Rene Auberjonois.
Right. Yeah, how do you say his name?
I took a vac of Vicodin so I can say it properly.
Yeah, Auberjonois. And he played the peddler, and he got into trouble.
He did. That plot line I couldn't follow. But, well, we're not there yet. What I liked about the movie, the second it started, they put up a title card that said, Manhattan, New York. Thank you.
Right.
Thank
Just
you.
So there's no confusion.
Oh, okay. You know, the picture of the Empire State Building had me confused. I thought we were in Manhattan, Ohio. Whatever. Never mind.
Manhattan, Kansas.
And I was noticing, since I've been covering so many of these movies on the show, that there are similarities in all of them. In almost all of these, the husband is an artist.
Yes, he is definitely
He's always an artist, and there's always a horse riding accident.
Yes.
Always. There was one where there was one with you, Toppy, when we did what was that movie? Stranger in Our House.
Yeah.
Yeah. With Linda Blair and her perm.
Yeah, and there's the horse accident all over.
But fortunately, there was no waxy totem horse penis in this one.
No.
Oh, shooey. Shucks.
I'm telling you, these made-for-TV movies were bonkers. Because, there was all kinds of fucking in this one, but that one had Linda Blair walking around with a big wax horse penis.
Yeah. Seriously, can we say this TV movie? They were drinking booze all the time. They were effing all over the place. Holy Jesus.
Yeah, so there were some echoes of the Wicker Man there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Stephen King did say that this movie was in his head when he wrote Children of the Corn.
Really? Okay. Yes. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm sorry, did I ruin it? Did I ruin it for everyone? It's like, oh, I thought that was an original story.
Nothing new under the sun.
No, there's not. And if you got a town of creepy people, you might as well write scary stories about them.
Yeah.
Especially if they're cut off from like media and things like that where they won't ever know.
Even better.
I didn't know which story came first. Stephen King or this.
Well, I think it was published in a book. The short story of Children of the Corn was like 1981, something like that.
Yeah.
Hot on the heels of this.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if he had got it from the book. Because the book came out long before the movie did. Of Harvest Home.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're having all their marital problems. She lives at her psychiatrist's office, this mom.
All right, this is not a happy family.
No, and one of the things she said early on made me go, oh, that was a weird thing to say. When she was talking to the psychiatrist, she's like, and every time we try to have, sexual lovemaking. I said, that was kind of redundant.
Details.
I just can't do it.
Just like Manhattan, New York.
I can't submit to him in that feminine way. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is very 70s. My goodness.
Right.
Something else about the cast I want to mention is that at the very end it says, the voice of Donald Pleasance.
Oh. I cannot believe he got a credit in the opening for that. As the narrator. It says, as the narrator. He ain't narrating anything. He's reading. He's a really? Book on tape reading Great Expectations.
Listen, if I ever heard Donald Pleasance's voice in this fucking thing, or a narrator, I didn't.
Did you guys hear a narrator? Did you guys find Don Pleasance?
Stephen.
The audio
book. Oh, Stephen, you broke up.
The audio book. The blind guy was listening to.
Oh, are you telling me?
Yeah.
Oh.
He was the narrator of the book on tape.
Are you fucking shitting me? That was
But the first time his voice came on, it was not clear that there was anybody listening to that
book. The first 3 or 4 times.
So I thought it was somebody in the room, whoever had hijacked and made a pirate tape of this off of the TV had been listening to the radio, and that was what was bleeding through.
Okay.
I was very confused by that, too, because there are 3 or 4 scenes when it's usually the wife. She's out running around getting stuff out of the car, and you're hearing Great Expectations. I'm going, that's not pleasant. And who's listening to that? And why is this happening right now?
Yeah.
There's no obvious reason. That's why I was sure it was a bleeding in from something else going on.
There's a reason for it. You find out later, but it.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't a big shock. It was just confusing.
There was this neighbor guy. He's blind, and he listens to books on tapes or books on records or whatever.
It was vinyl recordings of books on tapes.
I did not know this, but apparently it was Donald Pleasance reading us those stories.
Yeah, well, that Halloween money hadn't come rolling in yet because it's 1979.
Oh, God. I seriously wanted to know where the fuck Donald Pleasance came in on this movie.
His